Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio a new face over at the Borough, and from time to time that happens. Otto Feather, welcome.
Mike, thanks very much for having me. It's very good to be here.
So you have an important role to play as Emergency Services Director. Have I got that title correct?
Yeah, that's right. Director of Emergency Services. We've got hazmat, rescue, fire, and all the ambulance service.
Okay. Now, I know that the discussion about emergency services has been a part of many assembly meetings over a number of years. I've had the good fortune of watching the assembly for many years, and I know that this is considered, emergency services is generally considered a core function of the borough.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to say that. It is a core function. If government's job is to do what people can't do for themselves, this is one of those things that we can come together as a community to do for each other.
Right. And what you've described is quite the range. When we talk about fire, ambulance services, disasters and of all sorts, floods, and et cetera, et cetera. Let's go, first of all, and say, how did you decide that the Matsu Borough was the place where you wanted to spend some more of your time?
Well, I did almost 32 years in the military. Okay. And served all over the world. Mm-hmm. And actually, I come from farm country, dairy farming country, and had known people had moved up to the Palmer area and heard that this was a lot like home.
And
unfortunately, we don't have as many dairy farmers around as we used to here, but this is a great place to live and work, and my wife and I were looking for a place to retire where not just the beauty of the place, but the great people that were living there, and this seemed like a natural place to be after two tours of duty here at Elmendorf Air Force Base.
Ah, so you've been in the Air Force then?
Almost 32 years Air Force.
Okay. Very good. Now, I have heard it said that you had an involvement in the past with a very significant disaster, catastrophe in Japan. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. That was Fukushima.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to serve with a lot of great people in Run Yokota Air Base out in Japan. Mm-hmm. During the disaster that occurred with the earthquake and tsunami and the nuclear disaster that occurred. And I ran the hub for U.S. relief in support of Japan. So that was a big operation, lots of hard hours, lots of airmen and soldiers, Marines, and a lot of folks who were just doing great work out there. But I was blessed with the opportunity to run the hub for all that support.
Now, we have talked to people who were involved there. In fact, my wife and I actually passed through that area coming down on the train. We'd been up in Hokkaido for a while, and we're traveling down to Tokyo and beyond, and that was just before Fukushima happened. My impression is that was a surprise event at many levels, in part because, as I understood, the Japanese government had set up ways to prevent tsunamis from affecting things. Walls had been built. They had an infrastructure in place. But this was beyond what anyone could contemplate.
Yeah, Mother Nature has a way of tricking you just when you think you've got it figured out. There are some things that happen that are just going to be beyond our control as people. And it actually physically moved the island of Japan. It was such a shaker. And the tsunami is so huge that there was not enough time, a warning, or ability to get the people out of the way. It was truly a disastrous thing.
Right. So I saw only videos of a number of the events, and it gave me pause just watching and realizing that kind of thing. So using that as a touchstone, because very often when in your role, you have a responsibility that we have groups of people that are working with fire, ambulance, and so on, that have a we call it normal range of disasters or responses, ambulance services, smaller fires, et cetera. But then always in the background, I'm guessing, lurks the potential for the unknown, the black swan of an event that you really don't can't really prepare for.
Yeah, we can prepare to do our best to deal with whatever comes our way. And within the confines of economics and resources, we can do everything we can to be prepared for the big one. And the big one is out there. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Mm-hmm. And so a byproduct of what we do on a daily basis is the ability to create the infrastructure and the resources, the policies and procedures to be able to support when the big one comes so that we can minimize the loss.
Right, right. What, as you took this job, I'm sure you looked at the borough, you looked at the emergency services program that was in place. Now that you have been in the job, how long?
I've been in the job now just 2.5 months.
2.5 months, right. Okay. You've come in with fresh eyes, though.
I have. In full disclosure, I actually worked for the borough for a time as a volunteer / on-call firefighter for a time when I first got out of the Air Force, moved out here.
Okay.
And then did a stint working with fire for the borough, specifically working fire issues. So I'm a bit of a retread as I spent some time working on some fire issues, 2013.
Okay. And now I guess where I'm going with this line of discussion is, as you have now been able to look more thoroughly, do you have some specific goals, things that you can see that you'd like to accomplish to add to this infrastructure that's already in place?
Well, I think my predecessors for years have worked very hard to come up with the system that we have in place right now. And we're well supported by the community. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have any complaints there. The one place that we've made an investment here in the borough that I think is truly going to pay big dividends is our emergency management office in that program. Because that's all the nuts and bolts of how we manage a disaster and how we interrelate with the state, the feds, and the volunteers from the community. And they're truly a force multiplier for us. We get a lot of bang for the buck. So that's something that's going to have some emphasis for me. Obviously, going through a major disaster, actually a couple of major disasters and some combat operations, you realize how quickly it is, how important it is to make sure that we have the right tools, the right people, the right training to be able to take care of those issues. And it's relatively a cheap, it's not a very costly investment. Mm-hmm. To do those kinds of things, because it's all about bringing people together, communicating, and talking about what if and how are we going to handle it.
Right. I know that some years ago, Miller Reach Fire, which people look back as a marker, what came out of that was the recognition, the communication was not as well done as it might have been in terms of everyone literally being on the same frequency so you could talk about what was happening. I know there have been significant improvements in radio traffic.
Yeah, there have. And, you know, there was a time when we fought fire as small communities and you called a neighboring community and they pushed a button and the whistle blew and everybody came running. And but now with fewer people and less free dollars laying around, we have to be just that much more efficient. And the way we become more efficient is that we communicate and take actions in a very specific and direct way.
Right.
Those communication systems are essential to us being able to do that and keep our firefighters safe as well.
Right. And I know that what we've added, in fact, in our lineup of phones here, we have a sat phone that we use to communicate with the EOC, the Emergency Operations Center, when it's set up in a disaster, so that we will be able, since we've hardened our transmission sites with backup generators, et cetera, to be able to get a word that is appropriate to us and share that with the community should all of the internet cell phone structure fall down.
Well, I will tell you from firsthand experience that that is incredibly critical to be able to get the information out to people so that they know what to do, where to go, or just to be plugged in so that they can have the assurance that people are on the job and making good things happen. I was blessed with having the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service on my base out in Yokota when all of this occurred. And so I was able to go on the radio every day and talk about the radiation and the impact and water, food. There's a lot of things people become very concerned about when you're talking about nuclear radiation and the like. So I can tell you that having that tool at my disposal was incredibly valuable, probably the most important tool I had. So you provide an incredible service in this process.
Well, we've liked to think that we are plugging in ready to be able to actually do that with that question, what happens if you lose power, cell, internet? Radio can still transmit. People can still have a battery-operated radio or a car radio, et cetera, and hear what's happening.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit, though, given your background with the military. My understanding is that the military in Alaska stands ready and is in many ways coordinated so that if there is a large disaster, both federal government in terms of, we know, here in Palmer at the airport, we have Forest Service that's very active during the summer, but we also know that the military is available in some ways. How do you see all that?
No, that's right. It is really the same way we executed operations out in Japan as a military. We have capacity to support, whether it's in times of war or in times of peace when there's a disaster. And so my background, I'm a former C-130 pilot, which means we can bring the 82nd Airborne to you right away and rain down on you, or we can bring beans and blankets and water and whatever's required to help in a disaster. And, of course, we've done that many, many times when there's an earthquake around the world or a challenge that's creating strife for folks. We're there. And I know that our military's infrastructure here would benefit us greatly in a disaster, and I know that we continue to train. The military continues to train toward that end, and you've seen it in past exercises where we exercise hand in glove with the feds, the state, and with the military to make sure that we're keeping people safe.
Okay, so I've asked you a whole series of questions about emergency services from my perspective. Are there some things that you want to convey to listeners that I haven't touched upon?
Well, I think it's important for the community to know that this is really a labor of love for our folks. There's only 10 or 15% of the staff in emergency services who are full-time. Mm-hmm. The rest are part-time, seasonal, on-call, or just straight-up volunteers. And so they come from across the community. These are our neighbors, our friends, relatives who are selflessly stepping up to serve the community in that capacity. And if we had to go with a full career force to do these things, we'd be broke pretty quick. So in the truest sense of volunteerism, we count on these folks. And I think the community needs to recognize these folks for the value that they bring.
Okay. Good. Very good point. And there has been one change that's coming up that has also been talked about for a long time, and that's the 911 system, dispatch services, a mixed service with some state trooper, Wasilla provision, Palmer provision. Now Palmer still providing, but more locally, and a move over to Wasilla for that. That I understand is going to be finished on the 1st of July. How do you view that change?
Well, this was something that was just coming down the line when I was with the borough before and trying to sort out the best way to do dispatch.
Right.
I don't think people realize just how important dispatch is. Dispatch, they are truly, just as we talked about communications in general, they're part of the team. They're not dial zero, get the operator, and they'll call somebody to blow the whistle and roll out a fire truck. They are engaged intimately in everything we do from a safety perspective, from a triage perspective, and making sure that we get the right assets in the right place. So critically important. There's been debates over the years about how best to do that or who should do that. Should there be a centralized borough process, or is it best contracted out to another organization that has that ability? And so there was a competition for who would actually take on that role, and the city of Wasilla won that bid process. And so they're working closely with the folks here in Palmer to make that transition happen and make that as transparent as possible to the mission.
Okay. And you came on as pretty much that decision had been made. It was rolling out. So
yeah, it was a done deal when I got here. And so far, I'm very happy with the professionalism of the city of Palmer and the city of Wasilla. I say so far, I don't have any reason to not expect full cooperation and professionalism from both cities as they work through this transition. And I know we'll continue to work with Palmer very closely over the years. They've been a great asset for us.
In addition to communication, which implies radio and other forms, there has been a rapid evolving of the use of computers, pads that are taken into the field, reporting methods that are able to have not only the use of social media, but personnel who are on site to provide video, provide a location of what's happening, immediate response and gathering it. And I understand there are some developments in some tools that are able to gather all of that to provide management with a better picture of what's actually happening.
Yeah, and it's incredible what's happened since the first time I flew my C-130 across the Atlantic with a navigator shooting celestial and looking at stars.
Right.
GPS has come around and everything that's come along with that. And so now we've got the full spectrum of capabilities, including if we want to put something in the air remotely to be able to look over a scene and do a survey and get a picture. It helps us whether it's a forestry issue or whether it's a large scene where we've had a disaster to get the lay of the land. And that allows decision makers to front load back in a command structure the kinds of assets that they need to bring to bear before the first chief or responder gets to the scene. And when they ask for it, they've got it immediately, as opposed to this long logistics chain that it takes to get assets there. So it's a very valuable tool from a incident management standpoint.
Okay. All right. Well, Mike Malevsky, I've been here and we've been talking with Otto Feather, who's the new director of emergency services. Not so much new, but still new, I would say.
Even fresh
that way. Before we finish up, do you have any last comments to make?
No, I'd like to thank everybody in the community for the support. I know full well that the Mat-Su Borough gets it. We all have a very independent streak when it comes to how we want to take care of business, but we also have a very strong desire to help those who are in need, and I'm very proud to be a part of this community.
Okay.
Very thankful. Thank you, Mike.
Right. Thank you for coming in today.